Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Trump's Solomon Alliance. All eyes on Yemen, focusing on how the two leaders might jointly escalate their losing war. The recently rejuvenated military alliance between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia could have enormous and immediate implications for the war on Yemen. The peninsular and impoverished country has been in a state of total warfare ever since the Saudis began a brutal campaign against them in spring 2015. The stated objective has always been to restore deposed former President Hadi to power, who fled to the Wahhabi Kingdom after the Houthi National Liberation Movement took control of the country, though the implicit motivation behind the war is commonly recognized by most analysts as being a proxy conflict to counter speculated Iranian influence. Western narrative is that the Houthis are nothing more than a stand-in for Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps because of their shared Shia faith. Though that assertion has been clearly debunked by the fact that the group enjoys broad, cross-sectarian support all throughout Yemen. Nevertheless, it's geopolitically convenient for the U.S. to scare its Saudi ally with the boogeyman threat of Iranian encirclement, which is what prompted the kingdom's young defense minister, Mohammed bin Salman, to initiate the war in the first place. Trump made his anti-Iranian sentiment well known even before he entered into office, and his latest speech in Riyadh confirmed what many had already long believed, that the so-called Arab NATO, which the U.S. is trying to formalize in the region, is really aimed against Iran. The Saudis already lead a 55-nation coalition that is ostensibly supposed to fight against terrorism, but which is now becoming the cornerstone of the U.S.'s proxy plans against the Islamic Republic. Trump just agreed to the world's largest ever arms deal with King Salman for $110 billion, with the potential to raise it up to $350 billion across the next decade. And the Saudis already said that their coalition allies agreed to contribute a total of 34,000 troops as a reserve force. Considering the unlikelihood that the Arab NATO will be used against Iran directly, at least at this early stage of its formation, it's pertinent then to contemplate whether it'll be unleashed against Iran's perceived interests in the region, Yemen, in exacerbating the war in that country, though with the calamitous consequences of worsening the humanitarian crisis there and creating new opportunities for Daesh and Al-Qaeda to expand their gains.
Trendstorm.
So, folks, I'm very happy to announce that we're joined by a very distinguished guest today. That's Ms. Vanessa Bealey. She's an independent investigative journalist and photographer, and she's also the associate editor at 21st Century Wire. Hello, Vanessa, and thank you for coming on my program. All right, Vanessa, Trump says that Iran is exporting terrorism and imply that the Houthis are a terrorist group. And this rhetoric, of course, attempts to justify the U.S.'s mission creep in Yemen and support of Saudi coalition operations. While others say that the Houthis are a national liberation movement which wants to build a stable, sovereign, and strong Yemen. So where do you stand in this debate? And how important is the framing of it in understanding the events that you anticipate to play out in the country?
Well, I think it's very important to understand the background and the role that the Houthi movement has played in resisting basically what is Saudi occupation and colonization of Yemen by various pre-existing puppet regimes. Of course, Saudi's main purpose in quashing any sort of resistance to their occupation or their proxy occupation of Yemen is to prevent the formation of any form of socialist, democratic, reformist government in Yemen that would expose Saudi despotism and human rights violating absolute monarchy for the domestic and international terrorist tyrant. It really is, of course. And this was demonstrated by the intentions of the exiled Hadi administration to allow the Saudi plans to partition Yemen into six sectarian statelets in order to isolate and weaken the perceived Iranian proxy threat in Yemen. And of course, this leads us on to what is effectively the greatest threat to Saudi Arabia, or the greatest perceived threat to Saudi Arabia and to its allies in Yemen, which is to prevent Iranian influence over a vast area south of Saudi Arabia with its own gas and oil reserves, but which is secondary to the need for Saudi Arabia, and by default, of course, its US and UK backers, to find alternative oil routes to the Iranian-controlled Straits of Hormuz or the Yemeni-controlled Bab al-Mandeb Straits via the, we know it was a proposed pipeline that would extend from the Al-Jaz region in the northern hemisphere of Yemen to the southern coast of Al-Mukhalla, conveniently, of course, controlled by Saudi-funded and armed AQAP, who kindly stepped aside when the U.S. troops landed in the south last year. And then, of course, going on to the United States, we have a need for them to protect both their assets and their allies. Saudi Arabia is a known U.S.-UK ally in stabilizing the region, primarily in Syria, but also in Yemen. Because in Yemen, there is also this need to derail any glimmer of Arab socialism, which is aimed at liberating the Arab world from the yoke of imperialism and would threaten US-UK created and sponsored House of Saud monopoly over regional oil wealth. So again, we're seeing this very clear correlation between US-UK, even EU geopolitical strategy in Yemen, combined with the protection of its allies in the region, Israel and Saudi Arabia.
All right, Vanessa. Well, you know, Ciampa made a big deal about fighting terrorism alongside the Saudis, though the war in Yemen that both sides are waging to differing extents has led to an explosion of Daesh and Al-Qaeda territorial gains in the country over the past 2 years. Can you explain to our listeners how these groups were able to flourish in the first place and whether they serve the same cynical purpose against the Houthis as Daesh does against President Assad in terms of Saudi and American strategy nowadays?
Yeah, sure, Andrew. In order to do this, we need to have a very quick overview of how Al-Qaeda actually originated inside Yemen. This goes back to the American meddling, or let's say the creation of the Taliban in Pakistan to drive out the Soviet Union invasion, or this is how the U.S. perceived it, and this has been admitted by Hillary Clinton on numerous occasions in the late 80s. So they created the Taliban out of Saudi and Yemeni individuals' forces, who then returned to the homeland through the 1990s, and Saudi basically pushed those extremist elements back into Yemen. And in 2009, AQAP, Al-Qaeda Arab Peninsula, announced its presence in Yemen. In 2011, we had another U.S.-infiltrated Arab Spring in Yemen, in which the Houthi, or as a result of which, and through the GCC initiative, the administration of Houthi, who was a fundamentally a Saudi puppet regime, was imposed. But very important to mention here that the main opposition alliance on the 14th of February 2011 issued a statement, and part of that statement included making the war against terror a national issue by removing it from the circles of opportunism and marshalling all possible national resources to not only combat terrorism, but to eliminate it. That's a direct quote. And over the course of 2012 to March 2015, when the Saudi coalition started its genocidal war of aggression against Yemen, the Yemenis, including the Houthis and the tribes allied to the Houthis, took the fight to Al-Qaeda Arab Peninsula. The Yemenis instituted a general mobilization effort and started going after Al-Qaeda and pushing it out of lands it had control or influence in, which was predominantly in the south, until it was pushed back to a small desert region or a city port called Mokalla. Of course, then what we saw on the 26th of March 2015, as I mentioned, the Saudi coalition launched its genocidal war of aggression against Yemen and basically reduced all of those gains by the Houthi alliance against Al-Qaeda and allowed Al-Qaeda to re-flourish, particularly in those southern regions. What we've seen is this absolute working in parallel between the Saudi coalition, its US and its UK allies. Let's remember that Obama endorsed this war and actually enabled it to begin in March 2015 after President Hadi had actually resigned his post twice. So he's not the legitimate president of Yemen, as he is portrayed, of course, by the Saudi alliance and by its allies in the UK and the US. We've seen numerous occasions where even, for example, Brigadier General Ahmed al-Asiri has made the clear statement that their objectives of the Saudi-led war against Yemen do not involve the targeting of AQAP or Daesh. We know that AQAP is fighting the Houthis and supporters of former President Ali Saleh, so it's serving the Saudi Arabian agenda in Yemen. We've seen various reports, even from the BBC, that has exposed the coalition, the Saudi coalition fighting alongside AQAP. And we know that the expired Saudi-backed Houthi government in exile has appointed US Treasury specially designated global terrorists as negotiators in the Yemeni conflict. So we see this extraordinary, again, correlation between these terrorists factions fighting inside Yemen to further the aims of the Saudi coalition and the US-UK alliance.
All right, Vanessa, thanks a lot. That was very rich. You touched on a lot of deep and sensitive topics, but you know, when you talk about terrorism, you do have a lot to say, and it makes a lot of sense. Thanks for speaking to us. Now we're going to switch over to another very distinguished guest, and that's Miss Catherine Schachtum. She's director of the Shafakna Institute of Middle Eastern Studies. Hi, Catherine, and thanks for coming in to Trendstorm.
Trendstorm.
Alrighty, Catherine, I want to ask you about this existing division of labor in the war on Yemen, and where we see that the U.S. takes care of special forces operations, the Saudis do the bombing, and the UAE and other fellow coalition members carry out ground operations and occupy the country. Though, of course, we see that this hasn't managed to win the war for them. So, Catherine, what prospects do you think Trump's reaffirmation of the U.S.-Saudi alliance and de facto formation of an Arab NATO could have in shifting the balance of power and breaking through the present military stalemate?
See, the problem that I have with the very premise of this idea of an Arab NATO, and it's actually not even that, because I think we should call it a Sunni NATO, because the idea behind it, and I know that it hasn't been overtly made public, but the idea is to basically pit the Sunni world against the Shia world, and in this particular case, essentially Iran. And that's the main problem, is that the underlying, I'd say, a narrative of it is sectarian and based on exclusion. And it's trying to basically divide the region, you know, alongside sectarian line or even political line, you know, pitting the resistance movement, nationalism, this idea of political self-determination attached to sovereignty against, you know, Western imperialism, you know, as backed by Saudi Arabia. So for me, it's not going to go anywhere. If anything, it's going to make things much more complicated, because you're adding another layer, you know, of tension, and you're actually fanning even more tension and divisions within the region. And I don't think we need any more. If anything, we need to clear the field and actually force all parties to sit down, you know, around the table and have a rational conversation and to try to frame it within international law. But when you have people like, you know, President Trump going to Riyadh to try to basically act some kind of a, you know, salesman or wannabe mercenary, trying to offer some kind of cover, or even, you know, to try to rationalize somehow what is coming out of Riyadh, which is essentially bloodshed. How can you go anywhere? And I don't care what they call it. They try to call it the Arab NATO because NATO has some form of a legitimacy in the public's mind. So they think it's going to be a good idea, that it's going to be basically an alliance against terrorism. But we know that, you know, the so-called, you know, Axis of Evil, for example, was actually mislabeled, because the Axis of Evil is actually not that at all. If anything, it's the Axis of Resistance against imperialism. So this new Arab NATO, what is this but a rebranding of the wannabe, you know, counter-terrorism alliance, which is not, because in fact, Saudi Arabia is the fountainhead of terrorism. So how could you even consider trying to combat terrorism or even promoting stability when you have those guys sitting at the table or even leading the show? It's nonsensical, it's hypocritical, it's criminal, and it's basically taking people for fools, essentially the public. I mean, how many lies does Washington wants to repackage and resell before the public actually wake up? I mean, it's becoming farcical right now.
Catherine, there have been reports over the past couple of months that the Saudis are considering an offensive operation against the North Yemeni port of Hodeidah, through which most of the country's humanitarian aid has been arriving. So how do you evaluate the chance that they'll actually do this in light of Trump's full support for them? And what sort of consequences could possibly ensue?
Well, see, you would have asked me that question about 3 months ago, and I would have told you that Riyadh would never dare, because, you know, the public, and I think the world opinion in general, even, you know, including mainstream, has been unable to stay quiet, you know, on Yemen genocide, because we have to call it what it is. It is a genocide against the Yemeni people. Now, it's not a war anymore. But today, after what happened in Riyadh, after this visit, after, you know, billions of dollars were basically brokered, you know, in exchange for weapons and whatnot, then I would tell you that, yes, probably Riyadh will go for it. Mainstream will probably cover for it and somehow rationalize it, saying that it's necessary because of terrorism or because of whatever. They're going to come up with an excuse. But really what you're talking about is obliterating the last line, not of defense, but access to the outside world, you know, that Yemen has at the moment. And you have to understand that, you know, since the beginning of this war, 2015 in March, the Saudi arranged for a humanitarian blockade to be, you know, set up against Yemen. That means that Yemen, prior to the war, was importing something like 90% of all its food need, has now relied upon nothing almost to feed its population. You're talking 26 million people, and the majority of which is actually concentrating in the north of Yemen. The north of Yemen is majority Zaydi. They belong to Shia Islam, and the Saudi have done everything they possibly can to starve those communities, because those communities are, according to its state religion, Wahhabism, apostates who deserve to be put to death. And I'm actually quoting the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia. So you have to understand that today Washington is actually backing a grand genocide, because targeting the seaport of Hodeidah would basically condemn millions upon millions to death. And there is no other pretty way of putting it. There is, I mean, we talk often, you know, we denounce Nazism. We have denounced, you know, countless genocides across the world and throughout history. When is it that we're going to wake up to the one that we, that Western powers are actually backing in Yemen? Forget what happened in Syria. Forget what happened in Iraq. You know, forget what's happening in Bahrain or in Libya. What is happening in Yemen is a genocide in the purest sense of the word. And no one is actually daring speak against Riyadh, because Riyadh has still billions of dollars to throw at Washington, and mainstream is being led by Washington.
All right, Catherine, thanks a lot. You made a lot of hard-hitting points, and I'm very happy that you came on to speak about Yemen today. Thanks a lot. This is definitely your subject of expertise.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we reflect on what both of these ladies share with us today during our very deep and informative discussion about the war on Yemen, I think that we can come to the conclusion that that war might unfortunately escalate. If the port of Hodeidah is attacked, you're going to see probably the worst humanitarian crisis of the 21st century, if not in decades or generations. I hope that won't happen, but the indications are there. Also, we see that this war, far from fighting terrorism like the Saudis and the Americans have said, has actually led to an explosion of terrorism. Daesh is now in the country. Al-Qaeda is running around. They're creating their own emirates, caliphates, whatever you want to call it, and it's creating a lot of trouble. So we're going to have to see what happens with Yemen, because this is shaping up to be the next area. All right, folks, well, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this highly charged topic and this very, very sad situation in Yemen, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kripko. Thank you for listening, and take care.